nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's hour two. Scott Shapiro's joining us. Ron Gierking to follow to get into the Woodbine Mile card. And then Darren Rogers is going to be here with more breaking news. I mean, it's been a busy week at Churchill between Gary Palmisano's promotion and then the Ellis news last night. Now, this morning, you may see in your, for those of you that receive from the communications department, the Road to the Derby and Oaks schedule and changes have been released. So we're going to get to that with Darren Rogers right now. Happy to be joined by the Shap. Scott Shapiro joins us. Scott Shap 34. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you here in person, usually once a year with the Derby.
Or you know, twice with Breeders' Cup if it's here.
True, but good random, semi-random September. How was Kentucky Downs?
Fabulous. The sale was fabulous. Presque Isle was fabulous. It has been the magical mystery tour.
Yeah, you've gotten good weather other than the one day, as we talked about before we went on here.
And been great.
Appreciate you bringing some nice weather along the way here. I don't know how long we'll have it, but sometimes the fall can be pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. Fall's great. I mean, it's and of course, Keeneland counting on it as well for what is, you know, will lead into the Breeders' Cup and, you know, the beautiful colors. This is a nice place to be. At this time of year, and certainly from the racing side of things, outstanding. We'll talk about the sequences for tomorrow and the highlights. But Scott, first a wrap up from Del Mar, the most recent focus of your summer action.
It was a great meet, you know, tip of the cap, as I like to say, to David Jerkins in the racing office, to the whole team at Del Mar. A safe meet. The fields were bigger than you could have even hoped for, given the situation in Southern California. They did a tremendous job of knowing their stock and didn't take advantage as much as I would have liked. A slightly non-profitable meet, but felt like I was on the verge a couple times of some big hits. But as is the case with us horizontal players, Steve, you can be as hot as a pistol and still all it takes is one race a day to mix up that part. But always important to kind of throw in those win bets and those vertical wagers as well. So when you're right, at least the counterbalance is missing on a race or two when you're on point.
And that last night at the Mill Ridge party, and sat, as mentioned, I sat with the Legion Bloodstock people, including Evan Cianello. And Evan was kind of, post Kentucky Downs, he was kind of in that same mindset. He was saying, you know, I play so much big, you know, pick X sequences, and he says if you get into a drought, and I can identify because I had a lousy Saratoga on that front with really just, you know, two or three even just decent hits. I did not have a four figure hit the whole meet, and. And Evan was saying, I think I want to pare back and start playing more doubles. And, you know, this is a lesson that was learned when everybody on my website on Derby Trail in the horseplay section, when we're playing, you know, everybody's putting up their bets and discussing races. There's been a move in recent, really the last, I'd say 3 to 4 years, where a lot of guys have peeled away from the pick fours and fives in favor of heavying up on doubles and talking about 10 and even $20 double plays, Scott. And, you know, instead of spending 72, 96 and more on a pick four, pick five sequence, spending, you know, similar amounts of money, maybe 60, 80, 100, but you know, 2 by 3 in doubles for a higher increment for 10 and 20. And then when you hit, you get an exponential boost. And there's a lot to be said for that. And I think that a lot of people that, you know, don't necessarily know where to go and how to break out of a slump when it comes to cashing the big multis, that's probably the best advice, you know, pairing back to pick threes and to doubles.
Yeah, I was going to jump in and say the pick threes are good too. And you look at pick threes and doubles, you know, all you got to do is be one favorite, even in doubles, and you look at them and they pay so well. And like you said, you know, we see dollar or $2 double pays and 50 cent and dollar pick threes. But, you know, if you play them for that same increment, you know, dollar amount that you were going to play a pick five, not only are you likelier to hit them, but they come back bigger than you think a lot of times. And, you know, sure, you're probably not going to cash for, you know, five figures. That's the lure of the pick fives and sixes and even the fours at times. But you're going to avoid those big slumps because as good as you are, you know, there's variance in these pick fives that can run for years, not just months, in terms of winning at them, even if you're a good handicapper.
Well, let's talk about some handicapping and dive into the sequence. We had a conversation in the first hour with Marty McGee. We got Marty's thoughts. Let's see if how much your action jibes with Marty's.
Okay. You want to start with the open mind?
Yeah, let's do it through the pick five, exactly.
Okay. The eighth renewal, I think it is, between Sconson and Bell's the one. Every time you kind of feel like one of them is the better one going into a race, it seems to me like, at least in my perspective, the other one turns the table. And that was the case in the Lady Tack, where I thought Sconson was the one to beat. And she came up absolutely flat, now listed as the 8-5 second choice. But that was an outlier. I'm not convinced that she's seen better days at this point in her midway through her five-year-old season. She loves it here at Churchill. I think Sconson bounces back here, expecting Joyful Cadence to get pressure from Chitara. For some reason, Chitara does not break, or Joyful Cadence doesn't break. That would leave one of them in a favorable spot, loose on the lead. Otherwise, it's probably going to be a race between Sconson and Bell's the one. I'm going to take a little bit of what I expect to be a better price with Sconson as a lone A in here. I think speaking to kind of pick five strategy, probably better served if they're your two horses in making one an A, maybe one on a backup if you have horses at a price, or if you like prices along the way, I wouldn't be against using both of them if you're keying in on some, you know, long shots. But overall, I think the idea would probably be to pick one or two or play against them both. And for me, it's going to be Sconson.
There you go. Let's move to the Locust Grove and the Grade 3 that features, you know, some interesting horses doing some things, particularly with Tom Amos trying to fashion Lil Tootsie into a two-turn type. And, you know, a sprinter making this kind of transition can be very dangerous. They get out and are loping along and get very brave. And it feels like this has been a means to an end, you know, the two 1 mile efforts by Lil Tootsie. And she's 8-1. Talk about the Grade 3 Locust Grove.
Little Tootsie, 8-1, a horse maybe I didn't give enough respect. I still, you know, wonder about the two turns because the Ellis and the Groupie Doll, she ran huge. That's kind of that one-and-a-half turn configuration, and prior to that, all one-turn events. But she'll need to avoid regressing off that career-best effort in the Groupie Doll. She earned a 102 Brisnet speed rating. So the added ground and the possible regression are a concern, but as the longest shot or second longest shot on the board, couldn't fault anybody for using her. To me, it's En Boutant and Played Hard. I think En Boutant gets the edge here. She just loves it at Churchill. 4 wins in 7 starts, never been off the board. Maybe a forgivable effort in the summer colony at Saratoga. First off the bench, I don't think the inside was the best place to be that day. Would have liked to seen her run a little bit better, tire a little bit less in there. But when you get back to this racetrack, she's just a different horse. She gets her regular rider, Brian Hernandez Jr., back up. So I'm going to lean on a horse with the affinity. But I've got a lot of respect for Played Hard as well. She ran huge out of the Wilson Chute that day on August 4th at Saratoga. Her and Boston Post Road really throwing down to the wire. Had some time since then, and what a great meet it was for Phil Bauer at Saratoga. Little bit concerned about regression with this one as well, but I've always had a lot of respect for her talent. I think the mile and a 16th probably a little better than that 1 mile out of the Wilson Chute at Saratoga. So I'm going to lean on those two. And Gold Spirit, do you have a take on this horse?
I would be cognizant of Todd taking over. Not that it's easy to move a horse up from Chad, but basically has been, under Todd's care now for, I would think, the course of the summer. And I'm intrigued, in fact, by Gold Spirit's presence in here.
Yeah, obviously more than capable of having horses ready to fire fresh is Todd Pletcher. You get Tyler Gaffalione. I think enough of a potential separator in the sequence to consider along if you're looking to open this race up, which I am to an extent. I think I'm going to leave Crazy Beautiful, the 9-5 morning line favorite, out. Don't fully trust anybody in here. I'm going to go four deep, leaving Princess of Cairo the long shot and Crazy Beautiful off my ticket.
All right. Let's move to the first of the two-year-old races. And as we've talked yesterday with KK and earlier with Marty, to get this kind of a headline matchup, and obviously the two principals in Damon's Mound and Echo again. However, Curly Jack and Jace's Road are okay, and these are young horses that are lightly raced, and in some cases, doing things for the first time, two turning, etc. There's variables in here. The likeliest scenario has Echo again or Damon's Mountain winning. However, there's other considerations.
Neither of them have gone two turns. For Echo, again, taking on winners for the first time, and for Damon's Mound, kind of a sprinty pedigree, trying two turns, although this horse appears to be somewhat of an outlier in terms of pedigree and a very smart horse if you listen to everything that Michelle Lovell has to say. I did land on Echo again, who was the talk of the town long before his debut at Saratoga, hammered down to 3-5, extremely professional throughout, broke well, ran straight and strong in the lane, pulled away late, doesn't look like a horse that'll have an issue getting two turns. And then I picked Jace's Road for second just to mix it up a little, because I do think, based on all these performances and then the buzz and the talk, that he could get a little bit overlooked. And he did absolutely nothing wrong on debut and has certainly the look of a horse that's going to thrive as the distances get longer. And if he's going to be, the 2-1, 5-2, 7-2, the way Mike Battaglia set the morning line, I understand where he was coming from, but I get the feeling maybe Jace's Road gets overlooked in here because of it. So I don't want to leave him off. Curly Jack, I thought he got a great trip in the juvenile. Maybe the added ground will benefit and allow him to move forward, but I thought he really should have gone by and beaten Top Recruit that day. They threw it down, but Top Recruit had to work all the way around the racetrack while Curly Jack was sitting that great trip. So it was 9-6-3 for me. I'm going to lean on Echo again as my primary A, and then I'm going to back him up with the other two logicals.
All right. The Louisville Thoroughbred Society Sprint, and a lot of familiar names here. Amos favored 7-5 with Isolate. Necker Island, who scratched the other day for this spot. AC Expressway considered potentially to run at Kentucky Downs and ends up here for Norm Cassie. And Catman with the venerable Maniwa miles ahead. Marty made a strong case for his brother's horse.
Well, the Louisville Thoroughbred Society, real quick, if you haven't been, I don't know if you've been there, Steve, but downtown, Gene McLean's place, if you're in the area, great place to watch the races, especially on a nice day. I wanted to give the place a shout out. It's right downtown, not too far from the track here. In terms of the race, I thought Isolate, the 7-5 favorite, was a little bit vulnerable. He was impressive, of course, with that 4,000th win for Tom Amos back on August 10th at Saratoga in the Tail of the Cat. But he was loose on the lead that day over a speed-favoring racetrack, so that's something at least to take into account. Will he be loose on the lead again in here? He has the potential to be, but Top Gunner with Ray Gutierrez to his outside would like to think will put pressure on him. You've got Robo Man, who's probably not as quick, but is drawn along the inside, does get Florent Giroux, might get sent aggressively from there. I landed on Necker Island as the top pick. Chris Hartman won a race yesterday. I think it was his only starter. Might have had one other, but 20 for 66, Steve, at September at Churchill Downs over his last 5 years for,
wow,
the, get this, plus 114.4% ROI. It's pretty good. And this horse is an absolute, you know, warrior. He brings it every time. He got taken down in tough fashion in the Chesapeake when he was pretty impressive that day. Prior to that, split horses in the Jeff Hill Memorial at Ellis. He's got the tactical enough speed to not be too far out of it, but if they go fast early, he can relax. He loves it here at Churchill. So he's my top pick, and miles ahead. As you mentioned, Marty McGee's brother, Paul McGee, trains, finally was able to put his best effort forward away from Florida last time in the Kelly's Landing when he took an absolutely brutal beat for his connections and anyone that backed him at 15-1, losing the Breeders' Cup Sprint champion from last year, Aloha West, by just a neck. But I thought that was encouraging, like I said, putting forth an effort away from the Gulfstream Park surroundings, and I'm going to use him. So it's 4-5 for me, Necker Island and miles ahead. AC Expressway, I do think, has it in them if they go fast early to pick up the pieces, but on top, I'm going to stick with the 4-5.
Gets us to the nightcap, the Pocahontas, the Grade 3, and this I thought was a little bit more interesting, not more interesting, but a little bit more open just by the nature of the field size, with a dozen of these fillies, and Grand Love and Just a Warrior worthy as favorites. And one thing we talked about, and I'm curious what your view of it is, and looking at the Timeform US pace projector, it looks like the two favorites are the speeds, and there's a chance maybe that they hook up, and that could easily open the door for somebody to stalk and go, or for somebody to pick them off late.
Well, Grand Love was real fast out of the gate and real fast throughout much of that maiden breaking performance on debut at Saratoga. Got a little bit tired in the lane, but understandably so. Just a Warrior, you mentioned, drawn to the outside, but I think there's more speed than even that. Maybe they're just, you know, classier or quicker, but you've got Naughty Gal to the inside. You've got Shoplifter. You've got Boss Lady Bailey, who I don't know if has the speed, but moves from an outside draw to an inside draw after showing a lot of grit in a relatively slow race, maiden-breaking performance at Ellis. I went to with number 12, Friendly Persuasion, in a race where I don't think you can use that, you know, enough in the 11th and final. And, you know, there's some definite ways to kind of pare down and leave yourself the ability to spread here. I'm sure a lot of people will do that. But Friendly Persuasion, I was intrigued by the fact that, first off, on the 4th of July closing day here for the spring meet, Source took a ton of money, 5-2 in a 12-horse field for a Michael McCarthy firster, guy that, you know, has gotten a little bit more successful with firsters as these maiden races of the purses have grown, but not really a big part of what he does. And this horse chased a very fast pace that day, 21-3, 45-4, ended up splitting the field, basically finishing 5th, beating 6th. Then really, you know, against a lesser field in a wash-off race at Horseshoe, Indianapolis, it's not that she won, but she didn't get a good number, really, for doing so. But it was very professional and showed me that, like I thought, based on pedigree, that the two turns wouldn't be an issue. The outside draw, not ideal, but with the amount of speed signed on, I think there could be a little separation. Friendly Persuasion has tactical speed, which hopefully will allow James Graham to maneuver, angle in, and sit in that second tier off of what I do think should be a lively early pace. So not a you know, major strong play here, but at 8-1, hopefully we get that. I think Friendly Persuasion, very interesting.
I like it. All right. There's some ideas, including a fresh face in the nightcap among the fillies, Friendly Persuasion, and Shap persuading you. That's a look in the direction of Michael W. McCarthy, and interesting, the Arrogate. Certainly last week, Arrogate was terrific with the two Del Mar grade one winners.
No doubt.
Or the grade one and the grade two. Anything else on the card? Anything today?
Let's for today, in the finale, I like a 10-1 shot. I made my best bet for the simulcast and on my Twin Spires expert picks. It's number 9, Forever Home. This is just a $30,000 conditional claimer at 6.5 furlongs. But two back, this one broke her maiden at this 7-furlong distance here at Churchill over the main track, winning by a half length with a very nice stalking trip. I think she's going to get that trip again. She comes out of a sixth-place effort at Horseshoe Indianapolis. That was against first-level allowance foes at nearly 19-1, and it wasn't a favorable race shape. It was dominated by front runners, but this daughter of Ironicus came from off the pace, made a pretty strong middle move against the flow of the race before tiring late. So don't hold that effort against her last time out. Now cuts back to one turn with the turf, the dirt angle, and a little bit of a class drop. So number 9, Forever Home at 10-1 is my best bet of the day on today's 10-race card, which, like yesterday, man, that was challenging. But this is just another challenging card with some high quality and some wide open events.
Nice size fields, too. And you look at that late pick 5, you go 11 by 12 by 7 by 11 by 12. And here's Scott offering you a 10-1 shot in the nightcap for Brian Williamson with the biscuit. And good luck. I love it.
Thank you.
Scott
Appreciate
Shapiro,
it.
Everybody, and watch for Shap. No James today. James is had a couple of things that he had to take care of this morning. So unless I hear from him with a miracle pick, or if he sends me something either later today or for the weekend, I'll put him up on the website or tweet it out. All right, Shap, best of luck.
Thank you. Great to see you here, and glad you enjoyed your trip to the Bluegrass.
It's been tremendous, and it continues. We're going to have a nice, nice day tomorrow. Card starts at 12:45, everybody. Going to turn to Ron Gierkink, and their card at Woodbine starts at 1:10 tomorrow, and the intense action starts with the Grade 1 Summer as race 7, 4:22, but really the whole card terrific with some maiden action and some allowances, and it's always great to connect with Ron Gierkink. Ron, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
Excellent. And Ron, you know, things get so lost. I mean, between Saratoga and Del Mar and even, you know, even what went on at Kentucky Downs, and now we're getting ready here. You know, Churchill's pulling out of the station. The Woodbine Mile kind of snuck up on, at least on me, a little bit.
Yeah. This is, you know, this is the time we always have the race, and it just fits into a nice place on the schedule where there's not a huge race going on elsewhere, and this field came up pretty good. One of the better Woodbine Miles, I think. You know, thanks in part to the presence of modern games coming in from England. Last year's Breeders' Cup juvenile turf winner. He's going to try and become the first 3-year-old to win the Woodbine Mile.
Well, and part of, you know, you mentioned, you know, the opportunity to fit in on, you know, this third weekend essentially of September. And in fact, tomorrow, let me also mention, because I it's been so busy all week. Beat Bick, the final is tomorrow, everybody, and you got your email from Holly and from Michelle, and so I want to wish everybody best of luck in the Beat Bick contest, and I'm anxious to see who we end up sending to Vegas. I'll get out in front of it. Let me wish my wife a happy anniversary. We're not going to be together tomorrow, but it's our 11th anniversary tomorrow. And also my late mother's birthday. So a lot going on the 17th. And, in fact, I think when I went to Woodbine, I think when we went to the Woodbine Mile, I think it was also on the 17th, as it happens, because we were together and we went to Niagara Falls on the drive back home after Woodbine Mile. That was when Teppan won, Ron, which was just a fabulous
thing.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. So, but gosh, I wouldn't have guessed it was that long ago, but that makes sense.
It was a beautiful day.
And a tremendous performance by Teppan. Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive into this field, Ron. And I suppose we could also mention with Mighty Heart on the rail, we should note, and I'll take your, you know, your presence here to slip this in. I mentioned on Wednesday, of course, the result of the Prince of Wales and Duke of Love, the Cupid for Josie, and My Racehorse. They win the second leg of the Triple Crown.
Yeah. That was, he was a, you know, he'd run in every prep this year. He was off the board in the plate, but he got a great ride on Tuesday. You know, just sitting off the speedy favorite Ironstone and put pressure on him all the way, and he really took to the mud because it rained earlier on the card, and he just kind of drew off at the end. It was really a nice wake-up performance from that horse.
Well, we now have the Breeders to look forward to, of course, the mile-and-a-half turf event. Let's dive into this. Modern Games you mentioned, and, you know, there's a case to be made, Ron. Modern Games has really not seemingly moved forward from his two-year-old form last year.
Yeah, he has. You know, he won the French 2,000 guineas in his comeback, and then he ran third in the French Derby, which was a mile and 5/16, maybe a little farther than his best. Then he cut back to 7/8 at Deauville, two starts back, and he was fifth as the favorite, and his connections felt it was just too short for him. And of course, last time he was second to Baid in the Group One Sussex Stakes. And they were all thrilled with how well he ran that day. So I guess they point to this race ever since his prep for coming back to run in the Breeders' Cup Mile next time. But it's kind of funny, the headline they put on my story, if you recall, no wagering on him. He ran for purse money only in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year to a mix-up when he was scratched at the gate. So the headline on my story in the form is, Mile lures Modern Games, and now you can even bet on them. So it's pretty.
Well, we're assuming. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But he shipped in with the few other, another two-year-old of Godolphin's and Charlie Appleby. They shipped in last Saturday. They trained here all week. So looks like both of them are doing okay. So he's a deserving favorite, but I'm going to try and beat him.
I don't blame you, and I think most people are. And before we talk about the domestic players, and it's quite something, actually, how many horses participate in this race that you know, have run in it, well, in the case of March to the Arch, regularly. But yes, you've also got Town Cruise, which was a wonderful story when he won it last year with Brandon Greer. We had so much fun having that conversation. But before we talk about some of these other participants, I do want to talk about Simon Crisford showing up here with Finest Sound, who, you know, may kind of slide under the radar slightly, 10-1, and feels competitive to me.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I'm not quite sure if he'll be that high, but he should be at least 8-1, I think. And yeah, like, he's a 5-year-old who's just really gotten good this year. You know, he just missed in his last race in the Group 2 Celebration Mile at Goodwood, and the winner of that race came back to win a Group 2 in Ireland last weekend. I mean, I think this horse is in with a real good shot at a price. And you know, that Andrea Adzini is going to ride him. He rode him last time, and he won the Canadian International twice on Desert Encounter with really good patient rides, ground-saving rides. So he rides this turf course well. So I agree. I think this horse is a live long shot.
Well, the local players, let's start with Ivar. And, you know, here's Paolo Lobo, who has noted this morning already, is on an absolute insane tear. I mean, everywhere he is sending horses out, Ron, they're winning. And that is from Indiana to Churchill to Kentucky Downs to New York. A crazy run right now.
Yeah, Ivar's a deep closer. He was third in the Breeders' Cup Mile last year. And then he didn't run again until July 9th. So he had been off maybe 7 months heading into that $100,000 stake at the former Indiana Grand last time. And he had a fast pace to chase. And he came flying and broke the course record in the process of winning. So I think you know, it looks like he's playing for this race and maybe looking at the Breeders' Cup Mile at Keeneland. But, you know, if he gets if there's enough speed for him to run at, he should be right there at the end. He always fires.
Joe Talamo up to ride, and Talamo's been moving around like a knight on a chessboard for Paulo. Jump around, and who else do you consider serious win candidates in here, Ron?
Well, my top pick is Cheryl Spite. He won his first Grade One in the Maker's Mark Mile at Keeneland in April. You know, then he had a few bad, not so good races. His last race on July 23rd, he was fifth with a wide trip in the Grade Two Connaught Cup at Woodbine. It was a very hot, humid day, and Atfield told me the other day he just really regretted running him because the horse doesn't like hot weather. He subsequently entered him in the King Edward, which is the prep for the Woodbine Mile, the last prep, and he scratched him because it was a humid day that day. And now I watched him work the other day. I mean, he worked super with Emma Wilson. And the weather's going to be a little cooler tomorrow. It's not going to be really hot and humid like we had this summer. And I think at 12-1, I think he's got a good shot, especially, he's a closer like Ivar. He needs the speed to hook up, get smoking, and Town Cruise, who's taking the blinkers off. So, Cheryl Spite is my pick at a good price.
Interesting. In fact, I just as you were talking, I pulled up. I hadn't looked at the form selections, but I pulled it up, Ron. I'll tell you what, you're counting on a big day for Mr. Fipke tomorrow.
Actually, Roger told me that Mr. Fipke is going to be in town, so he's pulled out all the stops. He's running horses everywhere on the weekend, and I think he's got a good shot in the fourth with Secretary of the Nile, who just coming off a big work with Lady Spite Spear.
Well, you've also got Lady Spite Spear. You've got Spitestown Cheryl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's got a horse in the stake tomorrow, I think, on Sunday as well. So, Roger's pulling out all the stops. He's got his hands full with Mr. Fipke in town.
Well, we certainly like, considering we spent time last night with Sid Fernando, and of course, Sid instrumental in the breeding program for Chuck Fipke, and so always, always happy to see him do well, and they certainly do seem poised tomorrow. Well, there's your Woodbine Mile, and I suppose the only other question we should probably ask about this, Ron Gierkink, is the pace scenario. How do you? It looks like there's enough in here to keep it at the very least an honest pace.
Yeah, certainly an honest pace. Get Smokin' is coming off a front running fourth in the four star David Saratoga, and he's always on the lead. He should be winging it up front under Hernandez. With the Town Cruise won the race on the lead last year. He's a need to lead type. He's drawn outside. They're taking the blinkers off. So whether they try and sit off of Get Smokin' early and then maybe try and make a run on the turn at him, I mean, Town Cruise is really up against it, I think, because he's never won from anywhere off the pace. So like you say, it should be honest. It could be a sizzling pace, which is, which is what Ivar and Cheryl Spite and horses like that are going to need. I suppose Modern Games will be maybe sitting in mid-pack somewhere with the William Buick.
We should note, too, for those that didn't see the uncoupled Team Valor, not entry, but bi-coastal quasi-entry, Wakanaka back up at Woodbine, and of course had won the dance smartly, angling toward this, but also Neil Drysdale, who sent some horses to run at Kentucky Downs this week. Homer Screen, the Brazilian, shows up. This is a six-year-old and a lightly raced six-year-old that wins as often as he loses. So Homer Screen, a little interesting. And Joe Bravo, who knows him, Joe is very effective off the pace, and I wonder if they're going to basically apply a kind of a one-run concept for Home Screen, also 10-1, and I think you'll get every bit of that or more. To me, he's a little interesting as an outsider.
Yeah, and don't forget, Drysdale has won the Woodbine Mile like four times, if you include the disqualification of Hoxley Hill due to a whip thing way back when. Three times wow. officially, but he's won it more than anybody else if you count that disqualification. Hasn't won it in a while, but this is his race. I mean, you know, we joked at one point they should rename it the Drysdale Mile.
Well, thought to check with Rico first on that. Let's talk about the two grade ones. Ron Gierking from the Forum is with us. Ron, the Summer and the Natalma, as we start to look toward candidates to emerge toward Breeders' Cup the juveniles, the boys and the girls. And the boys will start it with the Summer, the one-turn mile configuration. And it just so happens that 94 Expos ended up coming up in conversation Monday on the show with John Green and Len, DJ Stables and Mark Cassie. And I was there. I was a season ticket holder. One of the great injustices in sports history, what was done to the franchise, but also what was done to that 94 Expo team.
It sure was, yeah. I mean, and a very clever name to think of. You know, to have this horse racing up here in honor of the Expos that year. And their other horses stay on our good side. Looks like they're both going to be long shots in the race. Godolphin and Charlie Appleby, they won the Summer and the Natalma last year. But they only sent up one two-year-old for the Summer this year. So that's Mysterious Knight in this race. And he's going to be the favorite. He's 2 for 5 in England. Well, and he ran his last race in France. He won a 5-horse Group 3 coming from last. Kind of a workmanlike win, and he was 2 to 5. I'm wondering if that was not the greatest field in the world. And maybe reason enough to try and to go against him here, even though he looks pretty imposing with William Buick riding. But he's going up to a mile now, a one-turn mile, and he's been running in a lot of, you know, 7-furlong, 6-furlong straight races. I think I'm going to try and beat him.
Looks like you leaned on Barbara Minchel and the Hooley group with Chisler.
I mean, talking to Barbara the other day, like, you know, all the horses who ran in the prep, the top 4 or 5, they're all in this race. The prep is a Soaring Free Stakes going 6.5. And she said that they've really been working on trying to get this horse to relax in his workout since the Soaring Free. And he has, you know, worked to her satisfaction and blew away an older horse in a work lot the other day. So I thought he'd be worth a shot at a pretty good price. Philip, my dear, won the prep for Kevin Attard. He's 2 for 2 coming from off the pace. I'm just wondering if maybe, you know, he's got the breeding of maybe a come-from-behind sprinter as more than a miler, but you certainly have to give him a big shot. And we have one shipper from Saratoga, Chad Brown's a praise coming off a 4th in the Skidmore in his second start after he won the first time out. Chad's numbers at Woodbine the last 5 years haven't been great. He's 5 for 35. 14% with a low ROI, so I just kind of try and look for a reason to not use his horses the last few years when they shipped up here.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's turn to the girls and the Natalma, and in here you've got what feels like, just kind of glancing, it feels like this is... Well, you got the 2-1 on Nathan Squire's Cairo Consort coming off the Catch a Glimpse win, but she's got to stretch out here to the mile. That, of course, was 6.5. You got some horses that have already negotiated a route, including G. Laurie, the 4-1 Matticat Oscar Performance filly for Graham Motion, who Manny Franco is going to get aboard. You mentioned Kevin Attard before, and Kevin's represented with a 3-1 shot that Clay Shearer and the Ulwellings have gotten together on. This was a $245,000 lemon drop kit, Wickenizer.
Full sister to Belichick, too, so she's bred to run on.
There you go. Exactly. Courtly Rowe for Kevin as well. So Kevin Attard throwing the kitchen sink at the Natalma.
Mm. no doubt, yeah. And, you know, the local prep was the 6.5 furlong Catch a Glimpse Stakes, and Cairo Concert did win that fairly easily with a dream trip along the rail, too. That said, I picked her in this race. I like that she's improved with every race, and I think she'll like the mile, and her inside draw is ideal, I think, with the inside part of the course not being used recently. So I do like her, and she can go to the lead, or she can sit back. And in this case, she'll be stalking or closing, I think. But I like her. You know, you mentioned G. Laurie, the only turn back in the race, really. One first time out at Colonial, going a mile 16th around two turns for Graham Motion. Won easily. The buyer wasn't great at 57, but now she's turning back to a one-turn mile. So really, she has that... she should maybe have a good fitness edge on some of these. And she's by Oscar Performance, who won the Woodbine Mile back in 2018. So, you got a few others like Adora coming off a second in the Catch a Glimpse. She was flying on the outside that day. And, you know, and I mentioned Wickenheiser. She was only fifth in the prep, but she had a very wide trip that day. And she's kind of like my sneaky pick for second in the race, because I think she'll love stretching out to the mile.
That's the Natalma, and then the other stake on Saturday tomorrow with the Woodbine Mile feature, the Seaway.
Yeah, this is a terrific race, Steve. This is maybe the second best race on the card after the mile. Have all the top female sprinters on the grounds here, and it could determine champion older female sprinter in Canada this year. And Lady Spitespear, she scratched out of a Kentucky Downs race last week because Roger was worried about the weather there. And he, you know, she thought to be maybe a turf specialist, but this race is 7/8 on the Tapeta, and she's unbeaten on the Tapeta with a big win last fall, going 7/8 in the Bessarabian with a 95 buyer. So she's going to be the favorite, but... you know, we got Super Sensational coming back from Saratoga. She's, you know, off back-to-back narrow losses in graded stakes on the turf. She's unbeaten on the Tapeta 2 here, but she hasn't raced on it since she was 2, and now she's 4. So, and the hot local horse in the field is Hazelbrook. She won the last two sprint stakes here, both going 6.5 from off the pace. Yeah, she's really come into her own the last few races, and I got to use her too. And of course, Dreaming of Drew, she's there. Here's another live Minshew horse on the weekend, and she was second in the Trillium last time on the Tapeta to Lady Spitespear, and that was going a mile 16th. So she's worked brilliantly since, and I think she'll like the cutback to 7/8. And Barbara really has great route to sprint stats. Since the beginning of last year, and gets leading Roger Kimura. So I think I would use all four of those in the exotics if you can.
Well, Hazelbrook absolutely feels like the now horse, and one more forward move from her, and she's your winner. And Jason Hoyt, don't know a lot about Jason, but he's got himself a hot horse with Lauren Richards, who wins at a high clip.
Yeah, he's been their constant rider. I think she's a bit of a head case, like historically, so I think that he's gotten on her in the mornings a lot and has worked her a lot and has gotten the rides in the afternoon. Good for him.
Well, it's a terrific Woodbine Mile card tomorrow, and the action, I didn't look into a contest, but I imagine there's a betting contest tomorrow?
No, we haven't had any betting contests recently, so, you know.
Interesting.
Since the beginning of the pandemic, no.
All right, well, now that's brutal. Because the Canadian forces are strong. Of course, they're a serious bunch to say the least, including Tommy Hammer and Ray Arsenault and Lorne and his son, and they've got to be a little chafed. I've got to get them some contest action back.
Yeah, maybe next year.
All right. Well, Ron, best of luck, and we'll be watching Ron's feed, DRF Gear Kink, and the action at Woodbine tomorrow, Woodbine Mile Day, as the fall season really digs in. We still got the breeders. Then we got things like the Pattison and the E.P. Taylor.
The E.P. Taylor. No Pattison this year, but the E.P. Taylor is going to be a big card in October, yes.
Excellent. All right, Ron, we'll talk, probably talk before breeders too, and I appreciate it as always.
You're welcome, Steve.
Ron Gierkink, everybody. We're going to stay here to the top of the hour, and Dave Grenig is going to join us. We'll check in with Hammer out on the road. We're going to touch base with Gary Palmisano and with Papo as well in hour three. But right now, it's not the invocation, but it's the next best thing. And seeing as how there's no inside Churchill Downs tonight, which is tragic.
It is.
This will be inside Churchill Downs. We're inside Churchill Downs with Darren Rogers, Big D.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
This is such a, I mean, I had a mild panic attack thinking, did I miss a Derby countdown? Seeing Steve Vick at Churchill Downs, it's always great to have you, buddy.
So much fun, and the way this thing all came together was just so crazy. And when I started looking at the calendar, and I plugged in Keeneland, and you know, because we knew we were coming to Kentucky Downs again, so it just I said, connect the dots, and here we are. And what great timing! Let's see what's happened in the last week. Gary Palmisano now basically going to coordinate the racing program across all these racetracks that suddenly now includes, Colonial at the end of the year, but Ellis Park now. And then minutes ago, the Road to the Derby kicks off. Was that because I'm here? Is that why you did this?
That's exactly why. Yes. Yeah, we made some changes.
I see this.
Slight modifications.
This is really good, actually, from what I can tell.
Yeah, it's just we're going to award points to the top five finishers. That'll give us the opportunity, the expansion of having more horses garner points, create possibly additional Derby fever with some of the ownerships that have horses on the trail. And then we've increased the significance of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, raising it to 30 points to the winner. Still not necessarily a scholarship race, as we like to call them. And then also increasing kind of those, regional quarterfinals, right? The stepping stones in late January to the championship series races, doubling their point values to 20 to the winner. And those races are like the Withers, the Holy Bull, the Southwest, the Bob Lewis, the Sam Davis, and the Battaglia.
Well, and of course, with the Turfway acquisition, the Battaglia and the Jeff Ruby, becoming more prominent and based.
As it was a year ago, sure.
Right.
Absolutely. And it produced Rich Strike.
It's unbelievable. Exactly. It's so now people don't have to just refer to Animal Kingdom anymore. The added points and the fifth place finish, that is makes a lot of sense. And
we did a cursory look. It really isn't going to impact the difference of the composition of the fields, but it could determine maybe the 18th, 19th, or 20th horse.
Well, and it I like the fact that it adds a little extra focus to the early to the early portion of the season. That is smart.
It's a little carrot out there to incentivize some of the horsemen to maybe start their horses a little earlier in the campaign,
which
isn't a bad thing. Is
no,
it? And with more horses on a leaderboard, possibly creating Derby fever may help. It's a carrot with hopes of maybe growing field size in some of these prep races along the way.
Well, and the Lexington at the end still, well, the Lexington 28-642.
It's been that way.
Right.
And no other changes.
No other changes.
Yep. The races are as is, the same races we had a year ago. We still have the European Road to the Derby, the Japan Road to the Derby as well.
Sunland, do we know, have we heard much from Sunland? Are they...
they're on our schedule.
They're okay, because I really have not heard anything about, right, because they've missed.
No, they were here last year.
Who came out of Sunland?
Nobody. The winner didn't slow down Andy.
Slow down
not,
Andy. Okay, there you
bypass
go.
Bypass the race.
That's very good. There we go. All right. I also see that, you know, a couple of weeks ago I looked at I was looking to see about Gulfstream's stake schedule, and it hadn't, at least it wasn't on the website. They may have had it internally, but it wasn't on the website. So it was good to see, it's good to see the placement, the Holy Bull, February 4th.
Well, we put the, hold on, just so you know, there's an asterisk next to it.
Oh, okay.
Which those are the traditional dates of where they would fall on the calendar if it was run the exact same time.
Okay.
And the race dates and the distances are to be announced by the host track.
I wondered because I'm trying to plan some travel.
Sure.
And I was a little surprised that the Gulfstream hadn't you know bolted down.
They usually have a schedule out by now, but they don't this year.
Well, the tweaking.
Yeah, it's just minor tweaks. To, you know, we're a decade into this now, right? 2013 was the first.
Wow.
Wow. First year of the point system with Orb winning that year's Derby. So, you know, it doesn't hurt to continue to tweak. And, you know,
always.
Again, the mission is to get the best group of three-year-olds, you know, prepared to go a mile and a quarter on the first Saturday in May. And before you even ask, we talk about the fillies again. The fillies are discussed on an annual basis. Can we find a way to get them in? But, you know, they have the opportunity to run an open company in these races, just like the Colts and Geldings do.
We should mention, speaking of fillies, the Oaks Trail starts, too, with the Pocahontas.
Yeah. How about this Iroquois?
Iroquois is unbelievable.
I mean, this is to get two of the most, I think they're two of the most dynamic, obviously, out west. Cave Rock is sensational. But, you know, Damon's Mound has been absolutely outstanding for Michelle Lovell. And then I thought Echo Again was one of the most promising juveniles up at Saratoga. And we're going to get to see those two clash in the Iroquois. I was a little surprised to see Mike Battaglia make Echo Again the 2-1 favorite over Damon's Mound. Echo Again did run faster. From a speed figure standpoint, but I do think Damon's Mound is going to garner a lot of attention, and I would not be surprised at all if Damon's Mound ended up going favorite.
The Asmussen name recognition, the figure
the figure
helps a
the
lot.
The figure speaks.
Yeah, and listen, Michelle, you know how what big fans we are of Michelle Lovell, but it's just not going to have the same. And Gabe Saez not going to have the same cachet, you know, for a wider audience looking at the
race. Those of us that may have seen the horse train or know about the horse, we're happy to get 4-1 on debut, and also the second choice last time out against Guntown up at Saratoga.
The road to the
Gulfport, rather.
Gulfport, that's right. And you know, the one, I didn't say this to Scott Shapiro before, but it rattling in the back of my mind was to say, you know, Gulfport had that same fancy, you know, going into the end of the season at Saratoga, and you know, not that he misfired, but you know, and he ran okay. So, but Echo Again was the talk of the spa, you know, well in advance. the Road to the Derby and the Oaks out for everybody's perusal today. And let's touch on a few, you know, other little tidbits. Excited to walk around and see the, you know, the new innovations here.
How about it?
Unbelievable. As Vicky Tomlinson said to me, the one thing you can count on, they're gonna be doing something. And we talked about it. We talked about it last year in this plan toward Derby 150.
Yeah, this is quite the project, the $185 million project for the complete transformation of the saddling paddock. And it is a two-year project. It'll be ready for Kentucky Derby 150 in 2024. At the conclusion of the spring meet, we started the preliminary demo work, did a lot of foundation electrical type work has been done this off season, and the demo work you can see. I mean, there are some obstacles with fans. You know, a lot of these projects that we've done over the years have not impacted the guest experience. They've been done in the off season or in areas around the racetrack that are not typically occupied. But with the paddock being the heartbeat of any racetrack, you know, there's just different areas. If you remember the old Blue Moon Bar that was, you know, right above the horse tunnel, that's, and the escalators, the Woodford Reserve escalators, yeah, going up, it's all gone. Those are gone. They're not coming back. Those that have not seen the renderings, the paddock essentially will be flipped. The walking ring will go from 5,000 square feet to 12,000 square feet. And then we'll have the horses saddled beneath the twin spires. So with the new paddock gate, right when you walk in through the facility, you will see horses in the walking ring beneath the twin spires. And then we're building up around, you know, the paddock with some great equine-focused premium seating areas. There'll be tiered viewing areas for, you know, the general admission patrons to look at these horses in the paddock. Two beautiful jumbotrons seating right beneath the twin spires. I mean, and overlooking the saddling paddock. So think of, you know, almost maybe a little bit like Gulfstream meets Del Mar paddock type of experience. When we released the renderings, Steve Asmussen sent me a text. And he said, Longchamp in France used to have the world's greatest paddock. You're about to have it.
So cool.
He just thinks it's wonderful. And it'll be, you know, the seating will be for about 3,600 people. But I'm excited the most about the walking ring. I mean, think about that. It goes from 5,000 square feet to 12,000 square feet. And you know, especially on Derby Day.
Oh, yeah.
It gives us a lot more flexibility and the ability to put more people within. And then that, we didn't even mention the first turn. So when you're watching, that'll be ready for this year's Derby.
Nice.
That's permanent seating that'll be covered, which is most important. 5,500 seats, I believe, with premium hospitality and underneath concourse area. The bar that they're creating underneath there, with a massive wraparound video screen, is very cool. That'll be ready for debut when you return to the Downs next late April.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's something. And then the turf course looks good.
It's green.
It's green.
It goes a long way.
It's
not spray painted.
No, not at all. It's flourishing. They've put in a lot of nutrients. They've met with a number of experts. They've all said this turf course is going to be fine. It just needs time. So we're giving it the time. As you know, each of the 135 races that will run this September are all going to be on dirt. The hope is to run it on
November.
October, what, 29th or 30th when the fall meet opens.
Those couple of days.
That fall meet run turf racing. So that would be, that's the goal. So, yeah, things are happening here at the Downs.
Well, we're going to be around that. We're going to be around that side, too, between Breeders' Cup and the sale and then the Churchill October-November season.
Stars of Tomorrow will kick off. You know, that's the fun time about this, the last time the Breeders' Cup was at Keeneland. We will start our fall meet on the Sunday, and I think it's October the 30th. Excuse me, I don't have a calendar in front of me.
Yeah.
But then be dark on Monday, Tuesday, come back and run Wednesday, Thursday. We'll be dark while the Breeders' Cup is run at Keeneland on Friday, Saturday, and then come back here on Sunday.
Right.
And then, of course, you have the big breeding stock sale at Keeneland on the Monday after the Breeders' Cup traditionally. So it's a great time to be here in the Bluegrass.
Well, we will be around, and that includes Night of Stars is the 6th, is the Sunday night, and then Keeneland starts the 7th. Keeneland picks up Monday the 7th, and their side of things,
yes,
the 7th and 8th, and beyond. So, and that all leads up to Veterans. That's actually Veterans Day week as well, and then Thanksgiving 2 weeks later. And
it's a compact 19-day fall meet.
Wow!
Us. But
crazy.
The prize money here in Kentucky with the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. I mean, these maiden races, $120,000. The allowance races are what, 127 to 140 ish. All of our stakes, with the exception of the overnights, are 200,000 and up. I mean, this is a great place to be, and now, you know, with the acquisition of Ellis Park that was announced yesterday, that we've entered into that agreement, returning Ellis, which was, what, under our purview from 1998 to 2006, if my memory is correct, really strengthening a year-round Kentucky circuit.
Big time.
You know,
big time.
People have seen what we've done with Turfway Park, the investment that we put up there. The new grandstand will be open. Well, it's open now, but you'll be able to see it in action when the racing returns to Turfway in December. But the purses are going to be great, overflowing with interest. I think we're going to keep the Trackside Louisville open this winter because there's so much demand from
nice.
Horsemen.
Nice.
Kentucky is, this circuit is booming, and the field sizes show it.
Oh,
I mean,
it's been terrific.
And thank you to the bettors. The bettors are responding. I mean, they are playing the Kentucky circuit on a regular basis, and it's a very compelling product.
No doubt. And we talked to Tyler Picklesheimer down in Kentucky Downs when we had the opportunity and talked about stalls.
Did they have any races less than 12?
Couple. There was a couple.
A couple.
No, it was not. It was crazy. Hammer. We'll talk to Hammer a little bit just for he's driving home. But it was crazy. I mean, I was there 4 of the 7 days, and we had so much fun. I mean, it's just you've been down there?
I have.
Just great. Just great. I brought you something from the Dueling Grounds.
I did not sample it last night, but I will sample it very soon.
There you go. Big D, before we go, I got to get Dave Grenigan, but how about Little D? Not so Little D.
Oh, my God.
He's killing it.
Yeah, no, he's doing great. You know, he's driving now on his own. He works at Double Dogs.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
He's a greeter.
That's
he thinks he's Bill Gates. He got his first paycheck. He thought he was Bill Gates. You know, it was like $290 or whatever it was.
That is the great feeling.
And, yeah, he's on his high horse. He's a junior. He's got the, you know, because of COVID, he has his first high school dance tomorrow night.
That's
so
nice.
Homecoming
wow.
is tomorrow night.
I wouldn't have thought of something like that, but yeah.
They didn't have any dances.
How about that?
And he didn't get to enjoy it for his eighth grade year at junior
high.
Or middle school. So,
how about these?
You know, yeah. So, yeah, he's not so Little D anymore.
No.
He's what? He's taller than I am, and he's 170 pounds of muscle right now.
whacking the pellet around, little golf.
He's doing golf right now, yeah. And golf is just wrapping up. And then he's said he's looking forward to getting back into the weight room and preparing for baseball.
Well, you're going to have to start some college visits.
Yeah. We'll go on the world tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go on the world tour.
All right.
I have a feeling UK is
high on the list.
Is high on his list.
All right.
Even though he's a Louisville fan, that's what's funny.
But it was friends. You know, where the friends are going.
It's where everybody ends up.
Exactly.
You know, so we'd be fine with that.
Derby media, everybody, and it starts tomorrow afternoon. Road to the Derby and Oaks, and we'll be tracking it. And Darren, thanks for having me.
Thank you, pal.
Happy
Always
to
good
be
to see
here.
You. Thank you.
Darren Rogers, everybody, and the breaking news this morning about some tweaking, including a little bit more influence on the road to the Derby for the juvenile and for the juvenile fillies. Let's take a break, our second and last of the morning. When we come back, Dave Grenig will join us from the Daily Racing Forum. We'll talk about the Jockey Club Derby and Oaks and the Pebbly Poo on Sunday. The Pebbles and Bam Bam. They should do about. They should run the Bam Bam, right? We got a lot to do. We've only got about. You got 50 minutes to do it. All right. Back after this to Churchill Downs. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Series.